Unibet. Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Shorthander. Abgefälscht. Und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht.
Unibet. Hockey. O'Clock. We're only a couple of days away of the opening of the 2022-23 National Hockey League season. And of course, the National Hockey League is very near and dear to Unibet Hockey O'Clock. And who better suited to talk a lot about what has changed, what we're all looking forward to seeing than Greg Holst. Coach, as always, pleasure having you on the pod. Very much looking forward to record this conversation with you and talk about the National Hockey League extensively.
Mark, my pleasure to do this.
Coach, first of all, we got to say that we kind of record this conversation with a heavy heart because I don't know if it's made its way out yet. I do think so, that a lot of people know, at the very least the ones that we've talked to. Pass 24, which was the Austrian rights holder for National Hockey League games the last two seasons, didn't extend their contract. And that's why we're incredibly sad about not being able to do commentary on the league that we grew so fond of. How were you when you were dealt the news that there would be no more National Hockey League, like, inactive commentary for ourselves in the near future?
Well, definitely disappointed because the league is so exciting and could be even more exciting as some of the lower teams are getting better. And you have, looks like Marco Rossi is going to be sliding in there. You've got Kasper, he's playing in Sweden. But, you know, is he going to get a call after a shortened season in Sweden? You know, is he going to be there? You know, Mickey Raffo left. We had a lot of fun, you know, watching him. Hey, I got to get on the train normally in a couple of days to go to Vienna to do it. Like, yeah, really disappointing. But, you know, I guess they make their decisions for the reasons they have. But I know we did have a lot of fun doing it over a couple of years, and I'm definitely going to miss it.
Same here. Apparently, the ratings, the numbers just weren't there, even though we always heard from a lot of fans. I mean, the Mighty Drunks even made us some jerseys, so that's very much appreciated. But from all the feedback that we got, it appeared that a lot of people watched it. Obviously, it never kind of really manifested when it comes to the numbers, and that's what eventually helps making decisions. It wasn't our decision from an editorial standpoint. I think we had great shows and tried to make it a worthwhile time for people that tuned in. Just to reminisce about the past 2 years a little bit, what was your favorite National Hockey League related moment? I mean, you came over as a commentator and an expert for the Ice Hockey League games, and it came out of nowhere that we were or that we would be able to do the National Hockey League. So that caught us on the wrong foot in a good way, just like it caught us on the wrong foot in a bad way that when it was announced that the National Hockey League would discontinue on Pulse. But looking back on the 2 years, what was your favorite on or off-air moment? Mine was definitely how you multiple times tried to hang yourself with the cable that was hanging off of the headset just seconds before we went on the air.
I didn't realize the job was so dangerous, but you did save me a couple of times, so I thank you for that. You know, the most fun, well, there was lots of great moments, and we had good chemistry, and we had some laughs, but it was fantastic when the Montreal Canadiens made the finals out of nowhere. And how exciting it is, Montreal, and we're having our beers for breakfast, the Golden Ale, watching Montreal in the finals. I mean, that came out of nowhere, me being from Montreal. That was freaking so exciting.
Yeah, getting back to the hotel at 5 a.m. in the morning, people getting up and we're having our good night beers. It's definitely a scene to remember.
Sorry to interrupt. My dad had the best line when I told him, when he saw the video, you and me having beers at the Golden Ale for breakfast. He said, geez, that's kind of like your old schedule. That's kind of like your old lifestyle. So we had a good laugh on that. But we did have a good time, Martin, and I appreciate everything we did together.
Most definitely. So there are other ways, of course, to watch and enjoy the National Hockey League. First and foremost, the National Hockey League Game Center, if people intend to watch it that way. It's a great way to follow the league. You get all the games, and it's very worthwhile to start watching the games in September because it helps you all the more or all the better to understand everything that this league is about come playoff time, which is then another great way to get into league action, but we'll save that for another day. Just a quick overview of what this podcast is gonna be about and how we're gonna tackle the many, many different topics, things that have gone on during summer, things that are right now ongoing as teams prepare for the season, and things that might be interesting for the course of the season. We're going to talk about both conferences and some of the most important teams, interesting story angles, storylines. And in between this conversation of ours, we're going to hear from Derek Ryan, former Villach player, now on the Edmonton Oilers. An incredible journey as he made it to the National Hockey League in his late 20s, an age where people normally go the other way, from the National Hockey League to European leagues. And that's why he's such an incredible person to listen to, why he's such a unicorn, and why, Coach, we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. If you want to directly jump to Derek Ryan's interview, the conversation I was lucky enough to have with him a couple of days ago, you can do so by accessing the show notes. You'll find the time code where you can directly jump to. But we said, Coach, that we're first going to tackle the Eastern Conference, so there's going to be a time code for that as well in the show notes. Then it's going to be Derek Ryan's interview, and then we're going to talk about his Western Conference, or the Western Conference where his Edmonton Oilers are playing in as well. That's the rough overview, the rough outline of the next hour, 1.5 hours. We'll try to keep it short and concise, but knowing you, Coach, and knowing myself, I guess we'll be running a little over time, but that's the beauty of a podcast. There's no way of talking about hockey too much. So we'll dive into things, and obviously the Eastern Conference. And the first team that I want to talk about in the Eastern Conference is, of course, the defending Eastern Conference champion, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Obviously, disaster struck these past couple days in the Tampa Bay area because of Hurricane Ian. So I guess it's a less than ideal prep for the players, their families, the coaches, everyone in the organization. And you and I, we texted back and forth as Hurricane Ian hit. It's an area you know very well as well.
42 years, I had a home on Sanibel Island, as my mom and dad did. I spent 6-7 off seasons there, 4 or 5 months. Had an absolutely fantastic time, good friends. I've been going to Fort Myers Beach for 42 years in Sanibel. Boy, it hit home really hard. It's like hard to believe, but you know, the world is changing, and I know lots of people lost their lives and their homes, and my heart goes out to all of them, and it's a sad, sad situation. And I know the football team, the Bucks, and the NHL team, you know, they're donating money to these to the cause, but it's very, very sad. It really is.
And then again, sports can be a kind of distraction when it comes to those topics, or this instance of Hurricane Ian really hitting Tampa Bay really hard. When we turn our attention to the sportive side indeed, and the Tampa Bay Lightning and what they've done to remain competitive, the one question that first comes to mind is, how open is their championship window? They got close to a three-peat, an unprecedented one during the salary cap era in the NHL. But is their championship window still open?
Well, it's funny because they say, you know, can they defy the odds? That's the line that you read a lot about, because they lost Palat, they lost McDonough, but they did make a couple of really smart moves, and the GM, Breezeball, is smart. The only thing that's really tough on these guys, you know, they had 8 pretty significant injuries in the finals. And you're going to need a month at least to recover. And you're going to have a 6, maybe max 2 month where you can really train your body. It's going to be really hard. The good moves they made, they picked up this Russian, Namestnikov. And he's an unrestricted free agent. And he's a pretty good freaking player. So what did they do to cover for McDonough? They picked up Ian Cole, 33, smart, 1 year contract, $3 million. So that's a smart move. They got Myers, Philip Myers in that trade, big young defenseman. Hago they got in last year. Nick Paul they signed long-term 8 year contract. They've made some smart moves. Really smart moves. Brian Elliott, backup goalie. They said he's gonna get more games because 63 games was too much for Vasilevsky. But they're gonna be in tough. But you got Stamkos, Kucherov, Point. Can they do it again? Can they defy the odds? I say it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but I tell you what, they keep on doing it. These guys have a lot of drive, so it's going to be a really interesting story.
It's funny that you mentioned the Nick Paul contract because he was a trade deadline acquisition last year, and he really impressed during Tampa's playoff run last year. And you said they got to find a way to keep this guy. Now, obviously, it's an addition and subtraction game. They lost Andre Palat, whom we always marveled at as well. But they were able to keep Nick Paul at a very reasonable $3.15 million AAV. How big, how important can that contract become down the road as they try to extend their championship window?
Well, it's huge because Nick Paul, in game 7 against Toronto, he got both goals. And this guy, he was visible every freaking game, and he did play injured at the end. So it's a smart move for Tampa. And you know what it is? It's a really smart move for Nick Paul, too. He said, look, I could maybe go somewhere free agent, maybe pick up $4 million. I'm going to be with a really good organization for the next 8 years. I'm set for life. Smart move by the team and by the player.
At the very top, when talking about the conferences, we're going to talk about the defending champions, which the Tampa Bay Lightning obviously are. And then we're going to have a couple more categories where you'll be able to slot in a team or two. But remaining with the Tampa Bay Lightning, it's very interesting when looking at the odds that we, of course, got from our good friends at Unibet. They aren't the favorite to win the Eastern Conference. Of all teams, that's right now the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're sitting at odds of 1-2, 5.25. And the Lightning just, quote unquote, at 1-2, 5.5. Is that something you might be able to argue why that's the case?
No, I have Toronto having a big year. I have Toronto maybe going to the finals. Because you know what's funny? You talk about Washington's window. You talk about Pittsburgh's window. You talk about Boston's window, and their windows are getting, hey, they're shutting pretty quick. They got max 3 years, probably 2 years. I'd say Toronto has a window of 2 years. And the reason I say that is because of Matthews. He's got this year and next year contract. Then he's a free agent. And that window, he might be gone, just like other guys have taken off. So Marner's got an extra year. So that window is 2-3 years for them to win, to get going. And I think what's happened, I think their mentality, I know they made a goalie change, which we'll touch on. I think it's become time where they've lost, 17 times in the first round. I think it's just going to, they're just going to put that on the back burner and say, let's just go for it. They didn't think Campbell was a good enough goalie, even though in game 7, the score was 2-1. Edmonton thought Campbell was the guy, but interesting, they pick up Matt Murray and Samsonov. This is going to be, the GM's going to be a freaking hero or he's going to get fired.
There's no in between in Toronto, right?
This is big. And this is big time. And I honestly think Matt Murray, he kind of bounced back last year. He had some good faith. I think this is a real good duo. Samsonov can play. Murray can play. He's won 2 cups, so he's not under pressure to win a cup. I think this is a really intriguing move I think Toronto is going to have a great year. They're going to get in the playoffs. And if they get, I believe they're going to get through the first round. If it's Tampa, fine. And if they get through, the piano's off the back. Look out.
It's interesting that did you say Matt Murray is not going to have any pressure because he's won two cups? Not having pressure in Toronto, not possible.
Well, okay, you know, maybe I phrased it wrong, but it's not like up to him to have to win the cup. He has cups. He knows there's pressure. He took the pressure on. So he says, boys, bring it on. I can handle the pressure. I've won my cups. I know how good I can play. He did have a couple of good phases last year. And I think Samsonov, those two guys working together, a little competition helping. I think that's a good duo. And I think Toronto, this is going to be an exciting year for the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's my gut feeling.
Just to round out the top four teams, the top four odds-on favorites to win the East, indeed, just to give people an impression, these are, as mentioned, the Maple Leafs, the Lightning, just a tad behind, and then at 1-6 odds, the Carolina Hurricanes, and at 1-6.5 odds, the Florida Panthers. Top four in the East that you'd agree with?
Carolina, 100%. Tampa, Toronto, Rangers, wish the Sturkin.
Good choice.
Dark horse, Pittsburgh.
Okay, dark horse.
Dark horse, Pittsburgh. Jari has to come up big, but dark horse, if they stay healthy, they were so close last year to getting through. If they stay healthy, you know, their window's tightening, but dark horse, I would say, would be Pittsburgh. I like Carolina. I like the Burns pickup. Anderson's going to be healthy. He's going to be battling it out for the Vezina with Shesterkin. You know, if Anderson doesn't go down last year, is there a different result in Carolina? Very possible, but we will see this year.
But that's what it is, isn't it? Like the healthiest team usually has the best chance of going all the way. Chances of probably not going all the way would kind of fit our next category that we try to set up. It's the most improved team. I mean, we've seen some bad hockey, and I always think back of our season opener last year with Buffalo against the Coyotes, and I do think it was a 2-1 affair where Buffalo wasn't even close the team that they ended up being at the very end of the year. But when we look at the Eastern Conference as a whole, who is your most improved team from last year to this year?
Well, I think Ottawa centers. I mean, you got Detroit, who made some really nice moves too. We'll talk about that. I'd say Ottawa. Ottawa picked up a couple of real, you know, you pick up a 41 goal scorer, and one of the MVPs in the league over the years, Giroux. You pick up Cam Talbot. They made some pretty nice moves. And boy, they got some good young players. Norris, Kachuk, Batherson, Stutzley. They got a hell of an offensive lineup. The question's going to be, you know, Zub and Shabbat, they lead the pack on defense. Are they going to be strong enough defensively? They're going to be great offensively, but it's going to come down. Can they grind it out on defense? So that's, you know, they got Sanderson, a real good young defenseman. And that's going to be interesting. It's also interesting with Cam Talbot. Like, is he the answer? He did not like last year in Minnesota when they brought in Fleury. He didn't like it for some reason. And then when Fleury resigned, he didn't like that either. He said, I'm out of here.
Surprise.
Interesting. Well, wouldn't you want to have two really good goalies to grind it out, maybe win a cup? So is he going to be the guy? He's number one now, and he's going to get some shots because they're the kind of teams going to be 4-3, 5-4 games because you're going to be defensively. That's not going to be the strong point. But offensively, boy, they got some nice players.
You're following a lot of Canadian media, and the Ottawa Senators haven't been good for quite some time. And they bring in Alex DeBrincat, they bring in Claude Giroux. They've got this young nucleus that they formed around Brady Tkachuk. What's the buzz about the Senators right now?
Oh, the buzz is huge. I mean, they signed these guys to Norris, Tkachuk, just like 8-year contracts. These guys are going to be around for... What they are is they're a freaking exciting team. they're not 1-2-2 defensive play. They're going on the offense. They are exciting. I mean, Coach Smith has done a pretty good job developing these guys over the year. But here, you know the stat as well as I do, the last 2 years, how Ottawa started. This is big. 2 years ago, they won one game in their first 10. Last year, they won four games of the first 20. So what happens? Boy, the dressing room starts to bicker. The fans are upset, and the coach is probably going to get fired. But let's look at the other side. If they come out of the gates and, you know, they win seven of the first 10, that rink is going to be packed. Giroux is from the area, as is his wife. They're excited already about him coming back. Excuse me. If they have a good start, this is going to be one exciting hockey city.
And attendance hasn't been great in the Canadian Tire Center the last couple of years. And DJ Smith, the head coach, is an interesting guy to talk about because he's heading into his fourth season as a Senators head coach. And that's usually where you want to see some improvements. What has to happen for DJ Smith to keep his job and the seat not getting warmer than it already might be?
Well, how did Ottawa look down the stretch last year? They looked pretty good. They had a above 500 winning percentage down the stretch. He's developed these guys pretty good. Stutzle, these guys, they're all getting better. Patterson, they're getting better. Kachuk's big, he's tough. You bring in Giroux. To break it, 41 goals. He just needs a good start. They're going to have to make sure that those forwards are coming back hard as a unit of five to play solid defense, to give Talbot. They also signed Forsberg to a 3-year contract, I think yesterday or this week. 3 years, $2.75 million, fits in good. So they got he's a real good backup goalie. So it's going to be about team defense. They're going to be offensively sound. They need a good start, and the city will be buzzing. They're going to pack the rink because of these new players coming in. So the coach's job is to make sure that they're defensively sound enough to go with the offense.
So, most improved team, the Ottawa Senators, very much looking forward to seeing them play. And we kind of created another category for a team that might come out of nowhere, might compete for a playoff spot, or even better. And we call it the dark horse kind of category. Who's going to be your ultimate dark horse team this upcoming campaign?
Well, it's got to be Detroit. I mean, Eisman's done a great job. You know, you're picking up. They all said when they took Seider, what's he doing? Like, why is he picking this guy? Well, we all know the answer. Rookie of the year in the NHL. The guy's great. You know, it's funny. My son, Taylor, Jamie Benn was his most favorite player for the last 7-8 years. You know who his favorite player is now? Seider. I had to bring him a Detroit hat this year from Montreal. That's freaking hilarious. So, Seider, what a player. Like, and what about Lucas Raymond? Another great player. So they got Bertuzzi, Fabry. Got hurt last year, but he's a real good player. They got a new coach, Derek Lalonde, 4 years in Tampa. They got this Simon Edvinson, potential defenseman. They pick up nice guys. Andrew Kopp, what a signing. I think he signed for 5 years, over $5 million. This guy's a player. I know he was in New York last year, right? And they wanted to keep him. But he got the nice deal. They got Husso, picked up a goalie from St. Louis, signed him to a 3-year, $14 million. David Perron, 2-year contract, just under $5 million. Ben Sherratt, 4-year contract. Ole Mata, they picked up some nice players to go with their young talent. This team is a dark horse. They're going to slide into playoffs, possibly with Ottawa.
Is this kind of handwriting of Steve Yzerman, that this team has got all over it? Just if you look at their recent drafts, I mean, Seider has been the number 6 overall pick in the 2019 entry draft. Now, you've already mentioned him, Simon Edvinson, a Swedish guy, also the 6th overall pick 2 years later in the 2021 entry draft. Is defense and the stabilization of the D the key for Detroit to compete for a playoff spot?
Well, it's kind of the key for every team. I mean, you don't have to be unbelievable But you got good goaltending now. You got really good offensive players. But the guys they brought in are solid defense.
Yeah, but you know what? Let me phrase the question a little differently. In the division that the Red Wings are competing with, the Panthers, the Maple Leafs, the Lightning, the Sabres maybe, as a dark horse, all being offensive powerhouses, are they even more dependent on stabilizing their D than other teams?
Well, I'd say bringing in Olli Maatta, Sherrod, Mark, Fizik, I think they've done a pretty good job of solidifying that. And they feel that Husso is going to be the goalie. And you got a guy like Andrew Kopp. He's not only offensive, he's a really good defensive player. I mean, we know Perron's going to score. They picked up some nice guys. And all these players, as the Raymonds and all these guys, and how good a Sider defensively too, they're going to be sound on defense. There's no doubt about that. But I think what Yzerman's done is he says, I got these young guys. I can pick up these other players for 2 to 4 years to really guide them along the way. Let's not be rebuilding every freaking year. It's too much pressure on the young guys. He's done a great job. Who's the coach you brought in? You know about this coach. You probably know more than I do about him because you've been telling me. And now, 4 years in Tampa, assistant coming through the NCAA, this guy, that's a great move, bringing in Derek Lalonde. This is going to be a really, really fun season in Detroit. Like, Yzerman's making these moves. He's not guessing with these moves. He's making smart, calculated moves to make this team slip up real close and having a good chance of making the playoffs.
And Derek Lalonde should be or could be a household name come November, December. He got mentioned here on Unibet Hockey O'Clock when a couple of months ago I was lucky enough to talk to one of his former players at the University of Denver with David Carl, who's now the reigning NCAA championship winning head coach. And he said he's going to be a good guy. And everything or almost everything coming out of the Tampa system the past couple of years has really worked out. And Yzerman, of course, knew him already as a part of the Lightning organization. So there's a plan in place for the right now. And there seems to be a very good plan in place for 1, 2, 3 years down the road. And how does Marco Kasper factor in all these plans?
Well, how does he factor in? He's kind of like Sider was. A lot of teams question, why are they picking this guy, Kasper, so high? But he knows what he's doing. He went over to Sweden now, and he's had a fantastic start. So I think it's a really good move letting him stay in Sweden, doing his job. I think that's a really good move. Does he get a call during the year sometime? Or I don't know how that works, but next year he's going to be penciled in. He's going to be bigger, stronger, more experienced. Financially, he's got a nice contract right in front of him. Great story. Another great Austrian story, as is Marco Rossi, as we know.
You were alluding to the great start Marco Kasper had in the Swedish Hockey League, and that's something that is confirmed by the Unibet stats. 5 games played so far. We're recording this conversation on Monday evening, by the way, with 4 points. So the scoring is there with Marco Kasper, always was there. But how does it work, like, in between players and organizations? How much contact is there, their usual? How much of kind of organizational advice is he getting in terms of bulking up, improving his game? How does it work between the bigger, the premier European organizations and the National Hockey League teams?
Well, let's put it this way. How many great Swedish players did Steve Yzerman play with? Unbelievable. Winning Stanley Cups. The Zetterbergs, the great defenseman. One of the greatest defensemen ever. His connection to Sweden is fantastic. That's why this is coming down. He's in contact with these guys big time. Yzerman knows exactly what he's doing. And that's why his connection to there, yes, it's tight. He'll be talking to the scouts. I'm sure he's going to fly over at some point. No, this is hands-on. Steve Yzerman is a pretty smart hockey man. Great hockey player, great GM.
And a name that might have escaped you would be Niklas Lidström.
Well, yeah, I mean, how could I forget Lidstrom? Come on.
No, it's okay. So many names that go around, well, so many teams.
I did have 7 concussions in my life. I'm just letting you know, right?
No, it's all good. And even if a couple more names are slipping you, they're slipping me as well. So we're trying to do our best to just get listeners out there that the status quo of what we think will be a tremendously exciting season. The Unibet stats kind of back the dark horsishness and the most improved team status of Ottawa, Detroit and Ottawa respectively, up, because making the playoffs, the odds for Ottawa are 1-3, and making the playoffs for Detroit, the odds according to the bookkeepers or bookmakers at Unibet are 1-3.75. I wouldn't call these long shot odds, so obviously the odds makers are onto something, as are you.
Well, they're on to something, and I didn't read those odds. I'm just going by my gut feeling. What's going on with other teams like Montreal? You know, they're not going to make the playoffs. They're going to be an improved team under Coach St. Louis. They're going to be on a really good direction. Buffalo is getting better. You know, can Lindy Ruff survive this? I think Boston's in trouble. I really do. I know they made a coaching change, which surprised a lot of people, but Marchand's out for a couple more months, 2, 3, 4 months, maybe January. McAvoy's hurt. Now Taylor Hall went down. Krejci comes back. He's 35. It's Bergeron's last year, more than likely. Like, wow, this is a beat-up team.
And the season hasn't even started.
Their window's tight. They got a lot of injuries. This is going to be a really tough year for Boston.
That would have been one of the categories that we talk about that I sent you beforehand. The team that might be in for a rough year. Is it the Boston Bruins in the Eastern Conference, or is there another one on your radar?
Well, you got to look at Washington too, I have to say, a little bit, because Boston's definitely on there. I mean, they might not get... Marsha had both his hips done. McAvoy's looking at 6 months out. Hall just went down. He's not going to be there for the start of the season. You know, like I said, Bergeron, Krejci. Ovechkin, he's going to score. He's 37. Uzi's 36. Backstrom is 35. He's hurt. How do they get this done? This is going to be Washington. It's going to be a tough year for Washington. Is Kemper the answer in Nets? I mean, they lost Vanacek. He was a pretty good freaking goalie. Is Kemper the answer? And like I said, OB 37, Uzi 36 back. These are their top players. I think Washington, it's going to be real tough in Washington, and it's going to be tough for Boston.
And you see, the difference couldn't be starker or more drastic. And according to our good friends over at Elite Prospect, the youngest team as of right now with the rosters that we're currently looking at, and some things might change up until the opening day for each and every team, but as of right now, as we look at this on Monday, October 3rd, the youngest team in the league, the Detroit Red Wings, with an average age of 25.8 years, and the oldest team in the league, the Washington Capitals, with 29.9 years in age.
And what is the league becoming year over year?
Younger, faster,
younger,
more skilled.
Faster, skilled league. So you think Yzerman, even though he brought in Perron, who's older, Chariot's not that young, do you think he knows what he's doing? He's bringing in some veterans now to go with this youngest team. It's just another smart move on his part. Now, next year, you're going to throw in Kasper in there. He's going to be bigger, stronger, faster. He's going to fit in. And you have experienced players. So this is why Yzerman, he started building that down in Tampa. Look where that ended up. And now he's doing it in Detroit. He knows exactly what he's doing. And his connection to Sweden is very strong.
As you were mentioning, two teams in the team that might be in for a rough year category with the Bruins and the Capitals. If you had to pick one of the two, who's going to have the worst year?
Washington. I think the Swayman and Nets, I think the Boston goaltending is strong enough Hall's not going to be out too long. The second half of the season will tell the tale with McAvoy, Marshall, all the guys coming back. And I think Backstrom's been hurt a lot. He's one of their key players. Ovi is 37. Bringing Krejci back too. Okay, so he's going to fit into that second line centerman. So they're going to be okay. I think Washington, it's going to be an old grind for Washington. But everybody's watching one thing. Ovi scoring goals, going to try to catch Gretzky in the next few years. That's going to be one of the most exciting things coming out of Washington.
I know we got 16 teams in every conference and roughly 20 to 35 players on the roster. So we're talking about hundreds of players in each and every conference that we're going to be able to see, and who knows who's coming over eventually and over the course of the season from Europe and other countries. But if you had to narrow it down to one player, who's the one player you're most looking forward to see in the Eastern Conference?
Well, can I throw one more thing in there on too in Washington? Wilson, sir. He's one of their big, tough players, and he's going to be out for quite a long time. He got hurt in the playoffs. He hurt his knee, and he's banged up. Okay, sorry to the new question. Who was my guy there? I think it was the guy that went to Columbus there.
Johnny Hockey.
He's 5 foot 960 pounds. He's like a fly on water. He's a fantastic little hockey player. Over 100 points last year. Had a lot of trouble leaving Calgary. He really did. He sent a heartfelt letter to the fans, and it was a tough decision for him. But he did it because I think some family stuff. And he's going to be really exciting to watch down in Columbus. It's going to be fun. He's probably going to play with Laine. If you read between the lines, so you know Laine is a big scorer, and he was happy to get out of Winnipeg. Now he's got to play with Goudreau. This is going to be an exciting story down in Columbus.
Everybody had Johnny Hockey, Johnny Goudreau penciled in to go to New Jersey as he was born and raised there and learned to play hockey there. And everybody kind of had him connected to the New Jersey Devils. How surprised were you that he indeed ended up on the Columbus Blue Jackets, which are relevant in our market, but probably not on a national level?
Probably like you and everybody else, totally shocked. I mean, this Columbus came right out of nowhere. But he had his reasons. He obviously had his reasons for not going to Jersey too. But it is what it is, and what it's done. You know, Columbus, it's people think it's not a hockey town. That rink is packed every game, and it's freaking one of the loudest places to play. And Goudreau's going there, so it's going to be exciting. He knows what's coming. I read correctly, he kind of had Columbus kind of penciled in on his little list of teams. It just caught everybody by surprise.
And it's going to be an interesting team for sure. Obviously, what will help to make the transition from Calgary to Columbus a little easier are the 7 years, or it's a 7 year contract with a $9.75 million AAV. It's going to be an interesting team to watch. And obviously, Johnny Hockey together with Patrick Laine, that could mean a lot of goals. Hopefully, a lot of goals will be scored by the guest that's upcoming right now. As we finish talking about the Eastern Conference, we'll talk about the Western Conference on the other side of the conversation with Derek Ryan. Just a quick one, as you just missed him by a couple of years, coaching him, seeing him in the old Able League. He went on to Sweden, and then at the late stages of his 20s, made his way onto an NHL roster. We talked about his journey a couple of times on our shows, but just trying to reduce it to one statement of yours, how incredible is it to you what he did?
I'll tell you why. I haven't met the young man personally, unfortunately. I've told this story to so many kids that we work with in Canada and also in Austria, or any other young player that wants to listen. the route that he took has to open your eyes for young players. I know the NCAA, this and major junior. He went major junior. He went to University of Alberta. You've got some great university programs in Canada. And when you play major junior every year, you get one free year of Canadian college. So he went to University of Alberta, 4 years, as other players have come out and had good careers. At 28, and then he came over to Europe. He played in Austria. Then he went, he made the NHL at 28 years old, but he came through the Canadian university program. And it's a great program. And that's what I tell kids, guys, don't think NCAA is everything. And it's a fantastic story that I've shared with many people. I actually follow his story closely. In his last contract, I think it was three years, $10 million, which he has earned over the years. A fantastic story, Derek Ryan.
And without further ado, we're going to have the pleasure of listening to said Derek Ryan. I recorded the conversation with him a little earlier this week. So this is Derek Ryan from the Edmonton Oilers here on Unibet Hockey O'Clock.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.
Back on Unibet Hockey O'Clock, back with the huge NHL preview. We're previewing the 2022-2023 season, and we have a huge guest right now. It's none other than Derek Ryan from the Edmonton Oilers. Derek, so looking forward to talking to you. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. It's fun to reconnect with my Austrian roots a little bit.
It's kind of funny. I used to have a podcast 8-9 years ago when you were on Villach, and I already had you back on there. I couldn't find the episode because obviously SoundCloud doesn't keep him around. So it's indeed really nice to reconnect. So first of all, for all the people who last saw you on ice with Villach, how have you been those 8-9 years?
Yeah, it's been a long time, eh? I've been good. Just grinding away here, playing in North America. It's been quite the journey. Kids are getting older. Zane, my firstborn, he's 8 now. He was born in Villach. And now he's 8. He's playing hockey here in Edmonton at the U11 level. And he's a pretty good little hockey player. And our 6-year-old, August, she's a girl. She was born after our Austrian time, but she's getting older now too. And so, yeah, I've just been busy with family life, hockey, trying to be a dad, a husband, and all those things. So it's seems like it's been a long time since I was in Villach, but at the same time, it feels like it was just yesterday. It's kind of a weird feeling.
Glad to hear that the next generation of hopefully successful Ryan hockey players is already here to stay. As you mentioned your time in Villach and everything that happened there, I vividly remember our conversation from back then where you said, well, of course, the NHL dream isn't over. And funnily enough, I hear that a couple of times here on the pod from players who are on the fringe of making the National Hockey League, and hardly ever anyone does make it. You are the exception, and you are one of the inspirational tales one has to tell when it's about realizing that dream. Is there ever a moment where you kind of try to sit back and think, fuck, I did make the National Hockey League?
Yeah, often, a lot. It's pretty crazy. My story's pretty, like you said, pretty inspirational. So I've had the chance to share it a lot, whether it's podcasts like this or with people at church or with friends or people I don't even know. It touches a lot of lives. And that those opportunities that I get to speak to people really gives me an opportunity to reflect and kind of take a step back from the busyness of actually playing in the NHL. I can step back and realize, like, wow, this is pretty special. This is pretty crazy how it all worked out, from Villach to Sweden to Charlotte to the Hurricanes to the Flames to the Oilers. It's a pretty crazy trajectory. And like you said, there's not many people that get to realize that dream in general to play in the NHL. But for myself to go along the journey that I took and to not get to the NHL until I turned 29 makes it even more unique, more special. The perspective that I had playing in Europe and playing in the minor leagues before making it really, really makes me appreciate how cool it is to make it to the pinnacle of hockey. And so I don't take anything for granted. Every day in the NHL is a blessing. It's a special thing, and it's something that I'm happy to pass along to Zane and August, my kids, and other people that can be inspired by my story. It's fun.
Now this is great, and obviously you've talked a fair share about all those kind of developments. It would have been kind of funny if you in your late 20s would have kind of qualified, not only qualified but would have won the Calder Memorial Trophy for best rookie. Now just thinking about getting to the National Hockey League at this advanced stage of your career and how you got there, and we always talk about our league, the old Able League, which is now called Ice Hockey League, as kind of a stepstone league. No one would have ever imagined for you or anyone else to indeed get to the National Hockey League. You took another step in Sweden and then made it onto to the farm system and the Carolina Hurricanes. And that at an age where not a lot of people thought it would still be possible to make the National Hockey League. Now, if there's another player out there who has that National Hockey League dream, who doesn't think that it's over, is there one piece of advice that helped you to eventually make it that might be helpful for others?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I get that all the time, and I really reflect on it and try and answer it seriously, because it's hard. It's a hard journey that I went through. But I think that the one trait that allowed me to, well, one, make it to the NHL, and two, still be playing in the NHL at 35, which is hard to do. The one trait that I had that helped me to do that was being adaptable. And what I mean by that is every step along the way that you just talked about, from Austria to Sweden to the farm leagues to the NHL, every league is different. Austria is so much different than Sweden. The old Able League, or now the Ice Hockey League, is so much more offensive. There's so many more scoring chances. Maybe the goaltending isn't the best there compared to other leagues. And going from there to Sweden, it was just a complete opposite. It's so much more defensive. There's so way fewer scoring chances. The goaltending there is, I would say, substantially better than the Able League. And so I had to be able to adapt to that different style of play. And obviously that year in Sweden was huge for me. That's one of the best leagues in Europe, if not one of the best leagues in the world. And so to go in there, adapt my game from the high-powered offensive game of Austria to the high-powered defensive game of Sweden and lead the league in scoring and have a great year, and then move on from there to play in the American Hockey League, which is night and day different from European hockey. I'm sure Thomas Raffel can speak to that. It's a big, big change. The ice size is so much smaller, and there's a lot more physicality, a lot more grinding in the corners, a lot less transition scoring. It's just a lot harder and a lot different. I don't know about harder, but definitely different. And then obviously making the transition from the American Hockey League to the NHL is a huge change as well. So every step along the way, what I'm trying to say here is that I had to adapt and change my game. I couldn't just stay, you know, Derek Ryan from Foul is Foul. I couldn't stay that same player along the way. I had to grow, and Derek Ryan and Foul is Foul learned how to score and make plays and use my speed, but I learned how to do different things on every step of the way, every step of the journey. So being adaptable, being willing to change your game, to suit where you're playing, who you're playing with, and those sorts of things. I think that, I don't think without that I could have made it to the NHL. It's huge.
Now, last time I checked, they don't really teach the ability to adapt during practices and hockey in general. How were you able to be that way, and where might be that advice for someone else, how to behave when being asked to be adaptable?
Well, I think it's being coachable is probably the best North American term, I guess. I don't know how you translate that, but being coachable, being willing to not be stuck in your ways, not be stubborn and say, no, this is Derek Ryan. This is how I was successful in Austria, and that's how I'm going to be successful every step of the way. It's saying, okay, well, that's, I can use the skills that I developed there, but I can also learn from the coaches and the systems and the structure and the different hockey style along the way to add bits and pieces to the puzzle along the way. And the puzzle is my hockey game, my career, and how I play. And so being coachable lends yourself to learning and never thinking you know it all. You don't have all the answers. No matter how good of a season you had, wherever you're playing, you can always learn and get better. And that's definitely something I see now playing for the Edmonton Oilers. I have the pleasure of playing with two of the best players in the world, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And they are the epitome of always wanting to learn and get better. They're always looking to ways that they can get better in their game, how they can change, how the game of hockey in general is changing, especially at the National Hockey League level. It happens fast. So they're always adapting, they're coachable, they're learning, and they're getting better. And if two of the best players in the world are doing that, then that's probably something that everybody should try to do.
Obviously, we're going to talk a little bit about them in a couple of minutes, but the one word that already kind of popped up during our conversation, and you named it when I prepared for this podcast, I always kind of look for storylines, and one of the things during training camp that always keeps showing up, doesn't matter if it's the National Football League or the National Hockey League, so many players always say training camp is a grind. How much of a grind is this training camp? We're recording this conversation a couple of days away from the season opener, already in training camp with the Oilers, but how tough is it at your age 35 season to go to a training camp for an eighth time?
Yeah, NHL training camps are a different beast than any other training camp I've ever been to. It's something you can't really understand until you go through, but it's the best league in the world. There's 60 guys invited to the camp, and usually there's probably about half of them or maybe 40 of them that have a legitimate chance at cracking the roster or making an impression and having a chance at playing, and everybody's fighting for a job, and it's a grind. Every day's a grind at the rink. On the ice is hard. You're grinding away in the gym every day, and I've just played two preseason games where we've traveled day of the game to Seattle, where we have to do the customs and border stuff, and then the one last night where you travel to Calgary. So there's the travel is pretty hard, and it just takes a toll on your body. And as a 35-year-old, it's funny to say because I'm getting old, but as a 35-year-old, it just takes a larger toll on your body as you do it longer. And it's hard. It's a mental grind as much as it is a physical grind. And it's something you really can't prepare yourself for until you go through it. And then you realize how hard you have to work and how many other guys want to be in that position and steal your job.
Then again, going through it for an eighth time, is there, don't want to make you sound old, but I mean, eight training camps, still something. Is there kind of a way you try to prepare differently, knowing or try to head into camp knowing what it's all about?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me, I think to answer your question, is just that every day is a new day. So you, if you had a great game last night, that's great. And the coaches and the management, they love that. But to be an NHL hockey player, you have to be able to do it every single day. And really, that's what it takes to be an NHL player, because we play 82 games a year. We're traveling all the time. You're gone all the time. It's a grind. So if you can't do it in preseason, there's no way you can do it in the regular season. And then for sure, there's no way you can do it in the postseason, which is even harder. So I take it as every day is a fresh day. You got to show up to the rink ready to work every single day. And that's whether that's in the gym or on the ice, usually both. And you can't take anything for granted. You have to show up every day ready to go and make sure you're putting your best foot forward. Because for young guys, especially when the management sees them coming up and maybe they have a chance to make the roster, they want to see you be able to do it every single day. Having one good game doesn't cut it. They want to see it every day.
One of my questions obviously would have been just how much of an advantage was it for you to start out in the minors? We see it with obviously a lot of young people on the roster anyways. For a lot of people, it's the way to eventually get the recognition of management when they're playing well in the minors. And a lot of people just don't ever want to return to the minors. But how important was it for you to have that experience, knowing that kind of grind in the American Hockey League to make you say, I want to stay at the NHL level for as long as possible and not gonna get back there?
Well, I think it makes you appreciate how well you're treated and how good you have it in the NHL, because like you just said, the American Hockey League is such a grind. The rink situation, the food situation, everything's so many levels below the NHL, that once you get to the NHL and you have the private flights and the fancy hotels and the big cities and the fancy rinks and the big crowds all the time, everything, the list goes on, you never want to go back. So I think that it's a good way to bring kids up. You know, they start in the American Hockey League and they realize, okay, this is pro hockey. They learn how to be a pro every day and come to the rink and take care of themselves. But then when they get a taste of the NHL, they appreciate how awesome it is to be at the pinnacle of hockey and to be at the top. So, and they also realize how much hard work it takes to stay there. So I think it's a great system. It works. A lot of guys that work their way up through the system realize that. Obviously my journey was even different, more different coming from Europe, but I definitely have the sense of appreciation for the life in the NHL, for how well we're treated.
Now, given the situation in the National Hockey League, I mean, getting there is one part, staying there the other. And obviously, if you go down there, a dozen players vying for that kind of roster spot, and I know, taking everything into account, it's hard to kind of build long-lasting relationships and friendships. But is there ever a moment, or was there ever a moment where someone was like, your journey to the National Hockey League is unique, where people try to talk to you about this?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, I get guys coming up to me all the time that didn't even realize, you know, what my journey was to get to be in the NHL. And then there's some guys that whatever did their research, or they've heard about it or whatnot, and they know already. And lots of guys want to talk about it. You know, they want to hear about, how was it living in Austria? How was the hockey there? How was Sweden? How was the hockey there? You know, what kept you going? The normal questions that I even get in interviews, it's the same in just a normal conversation. It's because it's an inspiring and unique thing that happened and that led to me going on that journey. So people recognize that and realize how special it is. There are some more guys coming up through Canadian University where I played before I played in Austria that are getting more of an opportunity. There's a guy in the Edmonton Oilers farm system right now who played for the Golden Bears where I played, and he's getting an opportunity with the Oilers. So it's becoming to be a little more, I wouldn't say normal, but possible for people to work their way up from there. Whereas when I was playing in university, in Canada, it was a pretty long, far shot, and it still is now, but it's more of an option now. So it's cool to share that story with people that are either just interested in it or maybe they have walked in some those footsteps as well.
I want to get back to what you just said at the very end of this conversation. As we're getting more players from the CIS system over here in Austria as well, Verkirch, where your good friend Dylan Stanley is coaching, is one of the places that brings in a lot of people from the Canadian university system, so to speak. But as we're heading into the season, the new National Hockey League season, and your season opener is going to be in mid-October against Vancouver Canucks, how much of a hockey hugger is there in Canada? I mean, it's probably never stopping, but heading into the season with the Oilers coming off of a conference final appearance, how much hunger is there for hockey right now?
Yeah, it's really high and it's really cool. Last year was pretty special when we went on a little bit of a playoff run there to the conference final. The city loves hockey and loves the Oilers anyways, but when we were going on the run, the city was just alive. It was electric. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone forgot about their problems at work or their problems at home, and they just cared about the Oilers. And it was really cool. I mean, guys couldn't go anywhere in the city, grocery stores or restaurants, or just walking around with your kids or dogs or whatever. You know, people come up and talk to you all the time about hockey, and it's all positive. You know, people saying thank you for making my life more interesting, you know, making my spring more fun. And so this city is just that it lives for the Oilers. And obviously there's some high expectations for this season, both inside our dressing room and in the city. So it's a good vibe. It's a really fun city to play in when things are going well. And I think the energy in the city's is building. Everyone has high expectations and we're all excited to get going, but it's fun to have the fans behind you for sure.
And those high expectations, they warrant it, because it's going to be a full season of head coach Jay Woodcroft. It's going to be a full season of newly acquired Jack Campbell. It's going to be a full season of Evander Kane. That buzz and that kind of high expectation level, how much do you really let it get to you? How much do you try to kind of zone out? Because obviously you talked about the day-by-day preparation and staying even keel. Do you feel that kind of buzz and the weight of the expectations?
Yeah, a little bit. But I think that most guys, myself included, just try and block it out, because at the end of the day, it's the NHL and every team, there's 32 teams, think that they're better than they were last year. Teams that didn't make the playoffs or were on the bubble of making the playoffs think that they're better. And it's hard. There's nothing given for free in this league, and you have to earn it. So although we had a great season last year, great postseason, and we have a recipe on paper for another great season this year, that doesn't guarantee or mean anything. And hockey's a funny game. It's a game of inches. Centimeters, if you will. And so nothing's given for free. And we definitely know as players that it's going to take a lot of work starting now in training camp all the way to when the Stanley Cup's given out for there to be any success. It takes a lot of work. So we realize that. And we know that just because there's high expectations doesn't guarantee anything.
Now, a lot of fans obviously following the Edmonton Oilers and all the other teams for that matter. But just to give fans an impression of how an average day in training camp kind of looks like, and I know there are exhibition games and their practice days and their off days, but if you had to kind of find the lowest common denominator of how a day during training camp looks like, what would that be?
Yeah, so usually there's a couple groups of teams that are skating, because there's so many guys, 50 to 60 guys. So there's a lot of bodies. Usually show up to the rink between 8 and 9. There's breakfast there, and you have breakfast and you get ready for the day. You have a workout of some sort of a mobility and activation series. Then you're on the ice usually for probably about an hour as a practice. Then there'll be either a scrape or a flood, or you'll go to the practice surface, which we have here in Edmonton. We have two surfaces, so we just walk across to the practice surface and we'll have some sort of a scrimmage with the other group. And it changes as camp rolls along and the numbers kind of dwindle down. Guys get sent down or sent back to their junior teams or whatever it is. But you'll have exhibition games where guys will play, be on the road, and then they'll get home late, 12 or 1 or 2 in the morning, and then just kind of rinse and repeat the next day where you have a practice and preparing for the next game. So that's a kind of general overview of what training camp would look like.
Now, you've had the distinct honor of, you've already mentioned it, playing with two of the very best players on the entire planet, with Draisaitl and McDavid. And it's kind of a cliche question, but one has to ask it when one gets the chance to talk to you. Knowing those guys, playing with those guys, sharing a locker room with those guys, what kind of things stand out about them? What kind of things do you recognize, or does one recognize first when practicing with them, playing with them, just sharing a locker room with them?
Yeah, it's a pretty special experience. It's special for fans, and I've been a fan, watching them for a long time to appreciate what they do on the ice, on the TV. But it's even more special when you get to see what they do day in and day out. And they come to practice every day. They're the two of the hardest workers. They're always trying to get better. And just watching Connor, especially as he's on the ice, is pretty special in practice. He skates so well. He stick handles so well that he's just so much better than everyone else. And it's so obvious when he's playing games, but you can see it in practice too. He skates circles around everyone. And it's a pretty special thing. It's cool for me. My kids are getting a little older, so they can appreciate it. And I love that Zane, being an 8-year-old, he can come around the locker room or come to the games and practices or whatnot and hang out with Connor and Leon and all the guys. And he can really appreciate, I try to instill in him anyways that he can appreciate, this is something special that we're witnessing here. Connor is going to be Wayne Gretzky in 20, 30, 40 years. That's going to be an equivalent statement. And, he's going to have his number in the rafters. Same thing. He's going to be, the next great one. He is the next great one. So it's cool for me because I am old enough to appreciate that, and I can pass that legacy down to my kids as well, where they know that dad got to play with Connor and Leon and play for the Oilers, which is a pretty storied franchise. And it's a cool experience for everyone in the family.
And what should be sending shivers down other NHL players and team spines is that McDavid is just 25, Draisaitl is just 26, as they're potentially hitting their hockey prime. When one does look at ages, and I know age sometimes is just a number, with 35, you're one of the elder statesmen on the team. Thank God there's still Mike Smith, who's 40 years old. Is there ever a point where you do think, okay, I am a couple of years removed from their day of birth?
Yeah, that's been definitely a funny thing to witness and go through. Beginning of training camp, you always get a big roster that has everyone's name and information, where they're from and date of birth, and it's pretty, frightening to go through some of the birthdays of the young draft picks. And some of them are born when I was graduating high school and maybe university too. So it makes you feel pretty old, but at the same time makes you pinch yourself and realize how lucky you are to still be playing in the best league in the world and get to appreciate some of the young skill and things and players that are coming up through the ranks. So it's, it's a cool thing, but I'm definitely getting up there in age, and I get that. The boys tell me that every day. They make sure I don't forget it.
Of course, kids wanna, or those kids in the locker room are obviously reminding you of that. I wanna kind of round this conversation out in two parts, and one of them is a very sad one that obviously we have to talk about. I vividly remember seeing the very first clip of little Ben Stelter entering the Oilers locker room and just being don't want to call him a motivational kind of tool device, but he's been one of the very good things that happened to the Oilers along the way. Obviously, his young little buddy being cancer stricken, and the Oilers being one of the inspirations for him. Sadly enough, he passed away this off season. You guys, it appeared from afar, fed off of what he brought to the team. Now that he's sadly passed, how difficult is kind of that situation for the team, and how much more do you want to make it work for him, knowing what he brought to the table?
Yeah, it's sad for sure. I think it's the biggest thing for us is that it brought so much perspective to us. You know, there's these kids that were dealt an unfair hand, if you will, and it's cool for us to be able to make their life a little bit special when we can. And you know, Ben's life was obviously way shorter than anyone would want it to be, and he was dealt a very hard hand of cards. And it made us smile and happy, and obviously made him smile and happy too, if you've seen any of the pictures and videos, to be just bring a little bit more joy into his life. And I think we, the team and the players and the staff and everyone, did a great job of bringing more than just a little joy into his life. They made him feel special, that he meant something, that he wasn't just going down this dark path alone, that he had friends with him to take care of him, to be there to pick him up. And nobody would wish the therapy and things that he had to go through on a young boy or anyone really, but especially a young child. So it's just, you know, motivating and inspirational for us as players, because we realize how lucky we are to be in our position. You know, I have two healthy kids, and that makes me feel pretty grateful for that. But it also is nice to show them, like, you know, sometimes other people are in hard situations, and it's always good to help them out and make them feel better, and, you know, kind of take their hand a little bit and help them along their journey. Because as much as we helped Ben helped us, you know, tenfold, if not more. So it's a cool story, and I think it was a great thing that all of us did and were able to take part in.
And for everybody who doesn't really understand what we just kind of talked about, just look up Ben Stelter, look up the impact that he had on the Oilers, and vice versa. It is indeed an inspirational tale, and a lot of people are still pulling for the Stelters, and obviously the Edmonton Oilers. Play La Bamba, baby, right? So to round this conversation out, and I'm so appreciative that you already took such extensive time. Just looking at your career trajectory and with your little son already lining up to be a future NHL star, hopefully. Knowing your journey from the CIS to the Able to the Swedish Hockey League, and just knowing the system and knowing how many people are involved and how many of them are constantly scouting and grading and whatnot, what's the one thing that, if there ever happens to be another Derek Ryan, shouldn't be overlooked, that was maybe overlooked for too long? What's your kind of advice to scouts of the future?
Yeah, that's a really hard question, because scouting is not an easy job. It's not an enviable job of mine. I know there's lots of kids out there that have a lot more skill than I do, and it's easy to see that on the ice, and it's harder to see, especially in practice or whatnot, the competitive drive, the coachability, the things that kind of the cliches of hockey, but the things that you can't really put your finger on that make a good player a great player. And so I think that the biggest thing is to, you know, try and look at a player's ability to learn, to be coachable, and to adapt. And also, you know, you don't have to be the flashiest player in the world to make it to the NHL. You have to be great in lots of different aspects. And I know scouting is a hard thing. it's not easy to envision players in different leagues and how they'll do, but I know there's a lot of players that do get overlooked, like you said. So it's hard. You want to do things to stand out, but I think that the biggest thing that helped me along my way was that I had coaches that liked me and appreciated me, and I wouldn't have gotten the job in Székes Fehérvár if it wasn't for the coach at the U of A that liked me and gave me a strong recommendation. He could have recommended, you know, three or four guys from that Golden Bear team. But instead he said, no, Derek Ryan's number one. You should take him. And they did. And the same thing could be said for Örebro from Sweden that took me out from Filak. You know, if I didn't have a strong recommendation from the coaching staff there and the management and recommendations of how strong my character is, they probably wouldn't have taken a flyer and a chance on me, because that's a big step from Austria to Sweden. So don't underestimate the power of building strong relationships, being a likable person, being a strong leader. And people realize that, and it might not seem like a big deal in the moment, but it adds up along the journey. And I think that's totally true with my journey.
Couldn't have put it better to round this conversation indeed out. One of the inspiring tales of hockey, and obviously a lot of people from Austria still pulling for you. Wishing you all the best for the upcoming season. I know it's going to be a grind, but we're approaching 30 years of Canada not having a Stanley Cup team. Maybe that's going to change with the Edmonton Oilers this time around. Wishing you all the best for the season.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Incredible conversation with Derek Ryan. Incredibly lucky that I was able to talk to him at this length. It's no gimme to take 30 to 35 minutes out of one's time, especially during the grueling training camp grind. A lot of things that we could talk about regarding the conversation, coach, but the one thing I want to hit on a little more is maybe one of the hidden traits in all of hockey, because he talked about being adaptable. Is adaptability underestimated? Does it need more attention, more focus?
Well, it's just like in life, you have to adapt to situations in your life, and sports is no different. You play on a small rink, North American size. You play on the big rink in Europe. You have to adapt. You have to adapt to a new system from a coach. You have to adapt when you're playing top 6 minutes in Europe. Now you go to the NHL, you're playing bottom six. You're killing penalty. You have to adapt to the situation because it's your job. This is not about scoring goals and stuff. Your job is, you have a contract, whether it's in Europe or whatever, you have to adapt to the situation so you can prolong your career. You got to be mentally strong. They have to have a good hockey IQ, which he obviously has. We're still talking about him here, I feel like. So his story, you have to adapt. Every coach, you have to adapt to. It's a great point. You have to adapt to the systems, to the culture of different countries, of the food, of the languages. Of course, you have to adapt.
Returning our attention to the Western Conference, those who just listened to Derek Ryan and maybe missed the first part of this podcast, we hit the Eastern Conference teams and the most important storylines heading into the season, in our view, at the very beginning of this podcast. Now we're talking about the Western Conference that obviously has the Stanley Cup champion, the reigning Stanley Cup champion in it with the Colorado Avalanche. And just to get this out of the way, there's still the odds on favorite to win another Stanley Cup. So we would have two successive repeats by two different teams. As we were talking about the Stanley Cup championship window being open and how long it might remain open for the Tampa Bay Lightning, how open is the window for the defending champion?
Oh, another 5 years.
5 years?
All these guys sign long-term contracts, 8-year contracts, all of them. So these guys aren't going anywhere for 5 years. So they're going to be one tough team to beat. I know they lost Kadri, and we'll go through the guys they lost, but they're a deep team. They went through the growing pains just like Tampa did. And now they felt what it feels like, and now they know how to get it done. it's not going to be easy, of course. But they, like you say, they're almost favorite, and every betting odds, they have them to repeat.
Yeah, the odds, just to break it down for the Stanley Cup, are 1 to 5.5 for the Avalanche, and then the next best odds are for the Maple Leafs. I'm sure Maple Leafs fans aren't going to like hearing this because they might think this is a kind of attempt to jinx them. But whereas the Avalanche are 1 to 5.5 favorites in terms of the odds, the Maple Leafs are a distant second with 1 to 10 odds to win the Cup. What does that gap say about the quality that the Avalanche possess?
Well, we saw it on display last year. Big, strong, talented. Their goaltending is good. Doesn't even have to be fantastic. They're so deep. Look at their defensemen. You got Makar, Taves. These guys are going to put up maybe 190 points again this year. This is, and that little Girard was hurt. He's back. This guy's a great little hockey player. He's got the shortest stick in the history of hockey. Him and Dennis Muruck. I played against Dennis Muruck. He scored like 50 goals. He had the little stick. And Girard has a defenseman. Sorry, I'm talking. Every time I see him play, I said, he's got a child's stick. But boy, does he use it well. McKinnon's going to lean the pack. Just signed the richest contract in the history of more than McDavid. And earned, eh? So I'd say this team's going to be around, but it's not going to be something. If you think about last year, the one team that could have beat them, if Kadri doesn't run Binnington in nets, that game could have gone 7 either way. Okay, so they lost Kadri this year, right? Okay, let's throw that in, and they lost a few guys. Do you want to talk about the players they lost? You know who they are. But how good were they without Girard, and Kadri only came in later in the playoffs? He was hurt. And they signed Rodriguez, a good signing. Good signing. Got him for the right price. He's going to score 15, 20 goals. He's a nice little fit. They lost Kadri, Burakovsky, Nico Sturm, Kemper, and Nets. So they signed Georgiev from the New York Rangers in net. Good, solid defenseman. Picked up Rodriguez. Landeskov, Makar, all these guys, all long-term contracts. 5, 6, 7-year windows open for these guys.
I vividly remember talking about the Avalanche because they, I think, were the odds-on favorite at the start of the last season as well. And we always ended up talking about the goaltender duo with Francouz and Darcy Kemper. Obviously, it turned out to be a Stanley Cup-winning goaltender duo. But now it's Alexander Georgiev who came over from the Rangers. Did they get better or did they get worse in goal?
I'd say they're probably close to being the same, pretty similar. The goaltending is going to be good. It doesn't have to be Vasilevsky. It doesn't have to be Shesterkin. They're going to be, you know, they're not going to get 40 shots a game. And these guys have their best defense. Makar has the freaking puck all the time. Or Taves does, or Girard does. So they play 70% in the freaking offensive zone. So these goalies have to be ready to make the key save at the right minute. This team, is Makar going to... How old is Makar?
23. Incredibly enough.
No, exactly. Is this guy going to get better? Probably. He's going to be sniffing around MVP more than likely for the next 10 years. And Taves, what a trade picking up this guy. You think he's excited? And now Girard back. It's an exciting team. You know, if you look at McKinnon's stats, they're freaking unbelievable. He's got 1.33 points in 70 playoff games. Third behind Gretzky and Lemieux.
Not a bad company.
648 points, 638 games. Not a bad combo. Gretzky, Lemieux, and McKinnon. And he signs for, what is it, $12.7 million for the next 8? Because he's been underpaid for the last 5 years.
And he's only 27. So a lot of
27.
Great hockey
so,
left.
Okay, let me say the window is maybe 7 years. Because these guys all have 7, 8-year contracts. This is
so as McKinnon goes, the Avs go?
As McKinnon goes, he's the big machine up front. But you got to throw Makar in there. You got a guy, you got a machine coming from the back, and you got a machine going hard up front, and it's Makar and MacKinnon.
And there you have it. Just listening to you, Coach, kind of proves why the odds for the Stanley Cup, or for repeating to win a Stanley Cup, are so good for the Colorado Avalanche. Just want to put some things in perspective for listeners that might be interested in some other odds. As we heard from the Edmonton Oilers and their preparations from the horse's mouth, in that case, Derek Ryan himself, the Oilers are seventh right now in terms of odds, with 1-17 to bring a cup to Canada for the first time since the 92-93 season. So we're indeed approaching 30 years of Canada not having a cup-winning team. And just on the other end of the scale are the Arizona Coyotes, with odds of 1-501 to win a Stanley Cup. But the Coyotes, they do have very different issues than most of the 31, I call them, professional organizations. In case you just might get enticed to maybe put a wager on a thing or two that we just mentioned, Unibet has a special offer for all new customers. It's a 400% welcome bonus. Just use the promo code HOCKEY-BONUS while putting in 10 euros into your new account for the first time and receive 40 euros for free. That's right, for free. More details, as usual, in the show notes of this podcast. Unibet, by players, for players. And Coach, when talking about the Western Conference, we of course want to take the same categories, or talk about the same categories that we had when we talked about the Eastern Conference. And I want to know your most improved team in the Western Conference.
Well, even though it's a veteran team, it's the most improved for what they've done. And I'm going to go with the Winnipeg Jets.
Why?
Signing Rick Bonus as a coach, played their coach there. That's number one. Paul Maurice left last year in the middle of the season. He left for a reason. That's my gut feeling. He said they need a new voice. They need a new, more than a new voice. They needed a new culture. They needed a new dressing room. Even though the players say, they talked to Bonus, he said, no. They need, something has to change on that team. Culture, the dressing room. I mean, they took off the captaincy of Blake Wheeler. I mean, how often? That's a gutsy, ballsy move from Rick Bonus. Shifley, I read, he didn't like that move. Well, you know, Shifley, you haven't been playing that great. So maybe you should shut up and fucking have a good year. Excuse my language. But that's how Bonus, maybe, did he talk like that? I don't know. They got Wheeler, Shifley, Ehlers, Kyle Connor, Lowry, Pierre, Luc Leduc, this young guy, Perfetti, coming in. Solid six defense. Hellebuyck in nets. They say you're one of the best goalies in the league. Well, we have to see it. This is a really good hockey team. And I know Shifley, I shouldn't get upset like that because this guy's a pretty good player, but he's even saying, I haven't been playing good enough. We've all had a bad year. I didn't like the kick. Smart move by Bonus. They're excited. They all have something to prove.
I want to follow up on a couple of things that you said. Obviously, Connor Hellebuyck, the goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets, just a couple of years removed from a Vezina Trophy winning campaign. But when we look at the guys who might be able to score points and goals for the Winnipeg Jets, is Kyle Connor, a 47 goal scorer last year, the superstar in the making that a casual fan hasn't heard of yet?
Well, they haven't heard of him because he's kind of like in Winnipeg, right? If he's in New York, they hear about him, you know. But no, the guy's, he was up in the top 10 for MVP, if I understand right. Wheeler's a great player. Shifley's a great player. Ehlers can fly. I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois came up big time last year. He's like 24, 25 years old, big and strong. They pick up San Gagne, a veteran, had a great year last year. Cole Perfetti coming in, scored a couple goals the other night. This is an exciting team. But what did Rick Bonus say? We have to play better for our goalie. We have to play better team defense for Hellebuyck, and they got David Rittich, nice backup goalie. They got to change the culture, the dressing room. The players know they had a bad year. Hey, Winnipeg's a great place. I know it's cold in the winter, but the fans love hockey. This is a hockey town. This team has something to prove, and Rick Bowness is the right guy to go in there, and for him to take the captain off Blake Wheeler, that is one gutsy move. Because if you remember correctly, is there something to it, even though the players say, oh, no, our room's good? Why did Patrick Laine leave? He said he wasn't treated good by a couple of the big players here. And, okay, read between the lines. He left because something was not right in that dressing room. And why did Paul Maurice leave? He wasn't a new voice. He knew he could feel something in the air. How fast did he jump on the job in Florida? He felt it was time because he knew something wasn't right in that dressing room. And I think Rick Bowness is the right guy to go in there. I'm surprised because when he left Dallas, he said, I'm 67. I think it's time to go to pasture. And all of a sudden, he gets this opportunity and this phone call. And he jumps on me. He's kind of got me thinking, should I maybe be coaching again?
But just to elaborate on that a little bit, and we of course know Rick Bowness a little bit better because Mickey Raffel always told us about him, and we got some insight on him. Is he one of the top three, top five culture changing head coaches in the NHL?
Yes, because he's been around through the old school, the new school, this school. He's really calm. He's been assistant coach for years. He's been head coach. He did a pretty good job in Dallas when you think about it. Went in there. I mean, they were close to getting to the freaking semis. So he's kind of gone through the old school, the new players coming in. He's really got a calm demeanor. I think he's going to call a spade a spade. And what do players want? Players want to be told the truth. And he said it right up front. We've got to change our culture. We've got to play better defense for our goalies. And the players themselves have all said, we owe our fans something because we did not play good enough last year. That's why this team is going to be one of the most improved, because they all have a chip on their shoulder. And this could be a freaking dangerous hockey team.
If it indeed happens, their odds of winning a Stanley Cup, they're getting more long shot-ish with 1-66 odds, but that might be a bet worth taking. But obviously the bully in the room in the Western Conference, of course, is the reigning champion, the Colorado Avalanche. We talked about most improved teams now in both conferences. Of course, we also have to talk about dark horse teams in both conferences. Who is a team that not a lot of people have on their radar right now, but should be having them on their radar come March?
Well, I think you got to keep, I know Winnipeg, a bit of a dark horse, yes, but Minnesota or St. Louis, Colorado's going to have their hands full with St. Louis. There's no doubt about that. St. Louis is not going away. What, they have 9 or 10, 20 goal scorers last year? I mean, they're going to keep coming. They lost a good goalie. Let's see what happens. Minnesota, Fleury's number one goalie now, signed. Okay. They were close last year. Fleury wants this number one job. They were a really good team last year, well coached. And of course, a little bit of a Cinderella story, Marco Rossi being there. It kind of adds a little bit of, something to us, you and me. But Rossi, we're working here in Austria, and we followed him so closely. And it's a fantastic story, what he went through. So a little bit of sentimental stuff there, but I think Minnesota, they were close last year and they ran out of steam a little bit, but I think they're going to be an exciting team to watch.
I mean, obviously, labeling them a dark horse, even though they made the playoffs last year, despite their first round exit, is not too brave an act of you, but
Can I throw in another dark horse that people probably aren't going to talk about?
Of course, you're allowed to do almost anything here on the pod.
It's going to be Vegas, right? Can Coach Cassidy turn them around? But the problem is, they made a bonehead move getting rid of Fleury. as a couple of other guys. And then Lehner goes down, he's hurt for the year. So they've got three
young ripple effects ever since, yeah.
Logan Thompson leading the way, three young goalies. Can Eichel have the big comeback year? They've lost a lot of pieces to get him. Can Stone stay healthy? The place is packed even right now when watching the games. It's an exciting place. Can the goaltending, that's a dark horse if you want a dark horse right there. In the bright lights of Vegas, it's a dark horse.
Very well put. So we kind of got two dark horses with the Golden Knights and the Wild. And I want to remain with the Wild just because of the fact that Marco Rossi seems to have a really good shot of making the opening day roster. We were lucky enough to do commentary on his debut game in the National Hockey League, and it's probably still sending chills down your spine because you remembered your first time touching National Hockey League ice. But when Marco Rossi trained in Vorarlberg in summer, and his dedication as usually showed, and his work ethic and everything else, one thing comes to my mind first when thinking about the past couple of weeks, the past couple of months, him leaving for North America. He said, "I'm not heading over there to make any new friends." Is this the right attitude, or phrased differently, does this have to be the attitude when going to your first or second NHL camp?
Well, 100%. And it's hard to do. But he also said, too, as the GM Guerin said, yeah, we have Rossi kind of penciled in, but he has to prove it and he has to make this team. And Rossi himself said, I have to make the team. There's no gimmies. And that's why his determination is second to none. Can I tell you a story about that? A friend of mine, Al Kerr, played in the NHL. He was 16 years old, average player, junior, 17, a little better. He penciled in all the guys on the right wing. Okay, who are the guys on the right wing? WHL. Oh, those four guys, not a chance. I'm going to beat the shit out of those guys. And he did. He went to the NHL, Islanders. He went in, Detroit. He looked training camp. No friends? He said, okay, there's six guys. Okay, he was physically fit. He was tough as nails. He said, one, two, those guys are not going to take my job. And he fought freaking most of them. Played in the NHL, ended up scoring 20 goals in the NHL. Great career. Yeah, determination. You don't have friends going to camp. You can go out to dinner once you make the team. And he's going to have to because he's a rookie and he's going to have to take the boys out quite a bit. And he's going to make the team. My gut feeling is he looks great. That attitude is absolutely fantastic. And that's an attitude that a lot of other players should follow.
It's still rookie duty, so it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that as well. Anyhow, needless to say, we're pulling all the available thumbs for Marco Rossi and really looking forward to seeing him play, and hopefully he's making that opening day roster for Minnesota. The Wild, your dark horse for hopefully maybe even a deep playoff run. But on the other hand, there's also in the Western Conference, in our categories, the team that might be in for a rough year. Who would that be for you as we stand here right now?
In for a rough year. It could be Vegas, the dark horse. It's going to be either really good or they're going to be in trouble. Because one injury, and Eichel has not played a full season in a long time, and the goaltending is... It's going to be make or break in Vegas. And I'm telling you what, if a GM ever should have got freaking fired, it should have been about 3-4 years ago. I'm not even going to go into that again. Getting rid of Fleury. They got rid of the face of the franchise. To this day, I don't understand that move. They've never been the same since they got rid of Fleury. Do you realize that? I know I get a little excited here, but I just don't understand that move.
And to my knowledge, Kelly McCrimmon, the general manager, is still with the Vegas Golden Knights. And that could be a make or break season for him as well. Something we're gonna watch for as well. Anything to add in terms of teams that might be in for a rough year? We've heard about the Coyotes with 1 to 501 odds of winning a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, you know where I'm a little bit concerned? Not concerned, but yeah, I guess concerned because I don't live far from Vancouver. You know, they've had a rough camp. I know Boudreaux's in there for, they had a great record when Boudreaux came in last year. But they're sure off to a slow start here in training camp. They haven't won a game. Seattle's beaten them twice. Seattle has improved. They're going to be one gritty freaking team. Vancouver, this is going to be a really interesting year. One of their top scorers went down. He's injured. He's had an operation on his finger. That's a tough loss. Can Peterson bounce back? He was absolutely unbelievable in his rookie year. They signed Miller to a long-term big contract. Surprised to many, they didn't trade him. Vancouver, this is going to be one interesting story here. You know, we're all pulling for him, of course, because we want Canadian teams to do well, obviously. But this is going to be really interesting with Boudreaux in there. And he's done a great job in his career. So let's see what happens in Vancouver.
And as we all know with Canadian teams, if things are going well, everything's great. But if things don't go according to plan, they can go south very fast. We had the player you were most looking forward to in the Eastern Conference. I, of course, want to have him in the Western Conference as well. Who's the one player you can't wait to see?
Jonathan Huberdeau. In the big trade, this whole Calgary story was quite something this past summer, like this offseason. Incredible how things transpired. Losing Tkachuk, losing Goudreau, 200. At least Tkachuk told him, he said, look, I'm not going to sign long-term, so he traded. So at least he did say that. Goudreau left, but it was hard for him to leave. But the moves that the GM made are absolutely incredible, getting Huberdeau. And troubling, the GM, he flew right to Montreal to speak personally to Huberdeau. And that was one of the key turning points. You want to have an eye-to-eye contact talk with your GM and your player, and here's our team, here's our plans, here's our goals. How do you like it? And Huberdeau liked what he heard, signed an 8-year extension for big money. Everybody thought he was going to go to Montreal. So that meeting, wow. And Huberdeau signing was huge. And who follows after that? Kadri is going to sign with the New York Islanders. This is just about carved in stone. Well, I guess it wasn't carved in stone because he signed a 7-year contract, $7 million a year in Calgary. So two fantastic moves, losing two fantastic players. Great move by the GM. And who is in the trade? One of your favorite defensemen.
Mackenzie Weegar,
44 points last year. And who is one of his best friends? Huberdeau. And he wants to sign before the season starts. He wants to stay there long-term as well. So this says a lot for Coach Sutter. It says a lot for the city. It says a lot for these players to want to stay in Calgary. This brings the whole team together. And they're going to be stronger than last year.
This rounds out our conversation about the two conferences. I want to round out our conversation, and it's been more than an hour worth of insights and opinions and hopefully fun stuff with a rapid fire round. I'm going to give you an award, and you're just going to give me a name, the name where you think, as of right now, that he has got the best shot of securing the award. We're going to start with the regular season MVP. The Hart Memorial Trophy. That's going to be?
Matthews.
Interestingly enough, according to our good friends over at Unibet, he's only second in terms of odds. The favorite is Connor McDavid with 123.75 odds, and then it's Matthews with 125.5. So there might be some value there for all the people interested.
Well, can I make a comment on that? Sure, McDavid. You sure. Know, you could pick it. I could pick him every day, every year. But I think Matthews might score 70 goals.
But you see, that's where your opinion comes in.
Yes, but Toronto, they have, it's an understatement to say they have something to prove. And if Mathurin stays healthy, he's going to get 60 again, if not more. That's why I'm picking him. Hey, how good is McDavid? The guy's freaking fantastic. But Matthews could get 70 goals. Who won MVP last year?
Matthews.
Why not back to back? He's got a chip on his shoulder as big as a freaking elephant.
I mean, we'll see him. We're about to find out. After you've named your MVP, we're going to indeed keep this a rapid fire round. I'm just going to give you the name of the trophy, the award, and you're going to give me one name of the player you think has the best shot of winning it. Calder Memorial Trophy for the Rookie of the Year.
It's going to be close between Owen Power, Buffalo, and Beniers, Seattle, but I'm going to go with Owen Power.
Jack Adams Trophy for the Coach of the Year.
Rick Bonus, Winnipeg Jets.
Norris Trophy for the Best Defenseman.
Pretty hard not to take Makar.
Rocket Richard Trophy for the guy who scores the most goals.
Matthews.
And last but not least, Stanley Cup champion of the 2022-2023 season.
Calgary Flames.
Ooh, there is indeed a Canadian team hoisting the cup in your estimation.
You forgot one of the trophies. The Vezina.
Oh, pardon me. Vezina.
Carolina. Anderson.
Nice one. Stupid me, of course. The goaltenders, Rodney Davis would probably kill me and deservedly so. But talk about why you think this might be Calgary's year or a Canadian team's year.
Well, it's going to be very difficult. I can honestly tell you that. There's no doubt about it. I just think the moves that they make strengthened the dressing room because Tkachuk did not want to be there. Goudreau did not want to be there. So all the players that saw them leave, Huberto at 115 points, he's going to play with Lindholm. He's one of the best passers, 85 assists last year. You lose Tkachuk, 100 points, tough, gritty. You bring in Kadri, 87 points, I think it was last year. Great playoffs, gritty, tough. Uyghur, great defenseman, wants to stay. So these players, by them signing long-term contracts, what are all the other players in the dressing room saying? These guys want to stay. They're not just coming in here, we're going to flip them at trade deadline. That dressing room is now tighter. And that's why I think, and what did Markstrom? He's a great goalie. He did not have a great playoffs last year. He knows it, and he's got a chip on his shoulder. He's going to bounce back. Calgary is going to be a really good team this year.
I'll leave it at that. Thank you so much for elaborating and enlightening me and hopefully a lot of listeners on the upcoming National Hockey League season. Shame that we can't really cover it, but we're trying our best here on Unibet Hockey O'Clock. Always fun listening to you and your takes. Really looking forward to doing the local leagues hockey games with you very soon. It's going to be a fun season.
Martin, really fun talking to you. Yeah, we're going to miss the NHL. There's no doubt about it, but we're going to be watching a lot on TV. But thanks very much for the interview. Enjoyed it.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.